postpartum body odor. It is a totally natural phenomenon because your body chemistry changes after giving birth. And so sometimes that means that what worked before is no longer effective. But I am excited to say that now there is a solution for that stubborn odor. The Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is a completely natural deodorant made by a postpartum mom who went through it herself. And it works by eliminating and preventing bacterial body odor without covering up your skin's comforting smell to your baby while giving you 12 hours of odor control. And let me tell you, it actually works. Here at the house, we've all been trying it and loving it. Now, before you think, ew, you're sharing a deodorant with your husband and daughter, let me explain that this full body deodorant comes in a convenient pump applicator that lets you apply it anywhere on your body with no bacteria traveling on the deodorant, so no ew involved. We also love that the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant has a delightful natural scent of USDA certified organic extracts that smell like a pink sugar cookie with lemon frosting. I thought this would be a little strange, but it's actually amazing. Also, the Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant is free from artificial fragrances and any kind of senoestrogens or herbs that can interfere with breastfeeding. Find your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant at postpartumdeodorant.com. That's postpartumdeodorant.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 20% off through the month of May. Get your Sugar Sugar Postpartum Deodorant now at postpartumdeodorant.com and start smelling more like yourself again. Now that we're in full spring mode, I am constantly reaching for my Jenny Kane Crop Cashmere Cocoon Cardigan because I find it is the perfect level of warm and cozy for when there's still a light chill in the air, but I don't want a coat. And like so many of Jenny Kane's bestsellers, this 100% cashmere cardigan is just so versatile. So I can wear it on its own over dresses, short sleeves, long sleeves, with slacks or jeans. It works with all of it, which is a really good thing because I just never want to take it off. And of course, this cardigan has the impeccable and luxurious level of craftsmanship that you can expect from all of Jenny Kane's products. Jenny Kane is a California brand through and through, and so think minimalist and effortless, but totally refined. Because they are a sponsor of the podcast, for a limited time, our listeners can get 15% off their first order while supporting our show. Go to jennykane.com and use the code BIRTHFUL15 to get 15% off. Now, I know that I go on and on about Jenny Kane sweaters because I'm frankly obsessed, but they also have everything you could want to finish out your look. They have dresses, shoes, and even a stunning collection of home essentials. Curate a wardrobe that never goes out of style at jennykane.com. As a Birthful listener, get 15% off your first order when you use the code BIRTHFUL15 at checkout. That's 15% off your first order at jennykane.com, promo code BIRTHFUL15. Let getting dressed be one less thing to worry about. Welcome to Birthful Mighty Parent or Parent-to-be. I'm Adriana Lozada.
Being an obstetrician, most of the births that I've seen, because of the nature of the UK system of obstetricians only handling abnormal birth, my mind and my memory of births is full of medical problems. So having these two people that I trust, who I've observed have good results, was very beneficial for me, an antidote for my many years of immersion in problematic obstetrics.
That's Dr. Amali Lokukamage, who is a consultant obstetrician and gynecologist involved in medical education in London, UK. And she's talking about the connection that she developed with her midwives and some of the really deep work that she had to do after intuitively deciding that birthing at home was the best course of action for her and her baby for this particular pregnancy. Dr. Molly is also on the board of directors of the International Mother Baby Childbirth Organization and is a former member of the advisory board of Human Rights in Childbirth. Now, this episode not only ties really nicely with our previous episode on home birth with Rubina Khaled, but it also circles back to so many of the ideas that we've touched upon during this series on models and places of birth. My conversation with Dr. Molly was, in fact, one of the very first ones that I did for the podcast, and so I find it a very appropriate way to close out this series. Her unique perspective just really puts on a spotlight on both the theoretical and practical aspects of birth, while also championing healthcare human rights, upholding the importance of autonomy and bodily integrity for true respectful care in pregnancy, and uplifting the value of connecting with your body and with your intuition, which is, of course, right up our alley. You're listening to Birthful, here to inform your intuition. Dr. Molly, thank you for taking the time to talk here today.
Hi, Adriana. Nice to be with you on your show.
So you also have a son who, while in utero, led you to have a home birth. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, let's start off with the fact that before I got pregnant, I suppose I was always a broad-minded doctor, but I remember quite distinctly for most of my career that I thought a hospital birth was the best way and the safest way. And I remember, again, before I got pregnant, thinking that women who desired home birth were misconceived, that I didn't really understand why they should want to do it. A bit mad. But I think my pregnancy and the experience of pregnancy educated me. I think in an average medical education, doctors are taught in an intellectual idea of birth and science, which is a very intellectual pursuit. But birth and the changes that occur in a woman during this very unusual time of life is a very physical and experiential experience. It's an immersion into an area when some women described there is a heightening of inner wisdom and enhanced sense of intuitive decision making. And I think during my pregnancy, I, through some unpredictable conditions of pregnancy, not serious conditions, but conditions that kept me away from my usual place of work, I was allowed to, in fact, broaden my outlook, broaden my understanding, deprogram myself from some very fixed ideas about birth and become very mindful and aware of my body and the baby growing within me, my son, and of an exchange of awareness and information between us both. And it wasn't until halfway through my pregnancy that this intuitive connection started making me feel that my body was capable of birthing normally, and a subjective experience, which can't be scientifically evaluated, but nevertheless a very strong feeling and a strong connective communication between my son to myself that he wanted to have a home birth, because in those circumstances he would know how to give birth and it would be the best place for me. I think being a very senior doctor within the NHS, the National Health Service, I think a lot of my colleagues would quite naturally, if I'm in labour, be quite worried and have a lot of anticipatory anxiety about my birthing process. So I felt that being at home and in the kind of heightened state of, I would say, an enhanced knowledge about myself and what was best for me would be actually the safest place to give birth for me. Though I have to say that this decision making was particular to my son. And if I were to have had another baby and the baby were to say, I need to go to hospital for a cesarean section, or that would be that intuitive, very strong feeling, I would do that. So in this particular pregnancy, that was what I felt led to do through a kind of what I would say an inner wisdom, which I wasn't really aware that a lot of women talk in those terms. But after my pregnancy, reading around the subject, I realized that a lot of people actually talk about pregnancy in those terms.
Mm-hmm. And I think you've hit upon a key element that I'd like to explore more, which is how every pregnancy can be so unique and how the circumstances are very much, you know, that intuitiveness and connection with baby can lead to different decisions, and the importance of, on the side of the caregivers, of not applying sort of a cookie cutter care, which is something that I, do you feel that is more common within the obstetric care?
No, I think it's throughout all of medicine. Over the last 15 years or so, or possibly a little bit longer than that, there has been a kind of one size fits all flavor to medicine, where it's felt that applying a certain way of taking care of people to a whole population was the best way of achieving health for all. But I think there is a movement away from that. There are certainly lots of very insightful publications from very high ranking academic staff from all over the world publishing papers on evidence-based medicine and the fact that often rules and, well, guidelines and protocols map poorly to complex problems in patients. And there is that recognition that one has to tailor care, and also that there should be the respect for autonomy in decision-making. But I have to say, in the UK, and I'm aware that there's a difference between the UK and the States, home birth is one of the sort of average options for women. It's not thought of as a sort of a strange thing to do. And we have an integrated healthcare system where midwives and doctors communicate with each other and have joint care over women. And that's what I felt that I received in my particular case. So there was always that sort of team working.
And things are definitely a lot more disjointed over here in the US where I'm at. What do you think would be a good way to get the doctor students to try to adapt this model a little bit more?
So part of my everyday role is with the medical school that I work for in London, which is one of the sort of foremost ranking universities in the UK, University College London. And within that medical school, we have a component of training which is about the integration of psychology through every aspect of health, ethics and law, what they call social determinants of health, interlaced with all of medicine. And within that kind of integrated health stream of education, I certainly deliver a regular syllabus to students on the psychobiological aspects of birth. For instance, I show my medical students, each cohort, which come to me every 4 weeks, Deborah Pascali-Bonaro's organic birth, which is the shorter form of orgasmic birth, so they can see that birth is not necessarily a difficult and painful experience, but can even be joyful and pleasurable for some. They get lectures on evidence-based medicine, risk and autonomy and human rights. And so in my medical school, we certainly do deliver that type of education. And certainly there is hope for the future. What I've noticed that after you graduate as a doctor, there is a little bit of education on the psychobiological aspects of pregnancy, but not as much as I think the future doctors will bring to the table. So it's more the older generation of doctors that probably haven't had that type of education.
Yeah, I'm thinking and trying to figure out, because I find that not a lot of the doctors that are coming through the ranks get to experience a natural birth or gets to see how it can develop without having to meddle with it. And like you were saying, maybe that the other colleagues around you, if you were to have the birth at the hospital, would be worried, and that there's enough research that shows how the energy in the room and that worry can affect how the moms react to labor and how labor develops. So I guess the essence is trying to get them to see films like Organic Birth, and to it's such a requiring a paradigm shift in their minds of seeing it as a normal thing.
I think you're right. I think I remember when I was in their shoes, it's probably about more than 27 years ago or more, I got more experience in normal birth. And my education, which was typical of medical students and my cohort of colleagues, is that I had to observe 10 normal deliveries and then conduct or be involved in 10 further deliveries. And now, because of the rise in cesarean section rate, it is much harder for medical students to actually gain that experience. And it's quite conceivable that the average doctor who doesn't end up doing obstetrics will only have been exposed to perhaps one or two or three normal deliveries in their lifetime. And most of them would have had some form of intervention like an epidural. And that's why I think it's quite important, and something I'm pushing for, is for the use of audiovisual materials about normal birth. In my medical school, medical students could go to a home birth if the timing was right. But because it's rather difficult in fitting it into a syllabus, the audiovisual and the video materials about a home birth is probably one of the best ways for them to get an idea of that type of birth, which is so, so different from a hospital setting. And even if, say, a student doctor goes on to pursue the speciality of obstetrics, then in the UK, where midwives deal with normal pregnancy and the doctors deal with the abnormal stuff, there's even less opportunity to see a physiological birth, an undisturbed birth, and even more important for visual materials to be there for a doctor. So it's my hope that we can develop this sort of thing in the speciality training that occurs after your basic medical degree. But I think it'll be a bit of a slow process. And I can see that the World Health Organization is very interested in respectful maternity care. And they've even understood the word obstetric violence. And they've even understood the concept that in facility-based birth, there can be a focus on intervention for no good reason. Of course, facilities have to be there for obstetric emergencies, and that's one of the basic needs of a community. But certainly if the World Health Organization is understanding this, there is movement and understanding within medicine.
Yum, delicious, tasty, super clean water. That is what we now happily drink, thanks to our AquaTrue Reverse Osmosis Water Purifier. It's just so much easier for us to stay hydrated. For me, that is vital because I am prone to getting headaches, and so being well hydrated really helps with that. And if you're pregnant or nursing, being well hydrated is also vital for you because good hydration is key during this time of life. AquaTrue purifiers use a 4-stage reverse osmosis purification process that removes 15 times more contaminants than ordinary pitcher filters, and they have water purifiers to fit every type of home, from installation-free countertop purifiers to higher capacity under-sink options. They even have a Wi-Fi connected purifier and mineral boost options. Also, their filters are affordable and long-lasting, with just one set of filters from their classic purifier making the equivalent of 4,500 bottles of water. Using AquaTrue water can even improve the taste of your coffee, tea, and anywhere else you use water to cook, like for making rice, quinoa, stocks, or soups. I truly can't say enough good things about my AquaTrue. AquaTrue also comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee and even makes a great gift. Today, my listeners receive 20% off any AquaTrue purifier. Just go to aquatrue.com, that's A-Q-U-A-T-R-U birthful.com and enter code birthful at checkout. That's 20% off any AquaTrue water purifier when you go to aquatrue.com and use the promo code BIRTHFUL. Tell me if this sounds familiar. You've taken gorgeous photos of your baby or your kids, and then when you want to share them, it is a pain either trying to find the photos or figuring out the group text that they should go to, and then also remembering that, say, Aunt Helen only does email, so you need to send her image separately. Or, like in my case, where my husband is a photographer who takes magnificent photos that I rarely actually get to see because they live on his phone or end up scattered in text messages that I can't easily find. Enter the Family Album app, which was created to give parents a secure and easy way to share photos and videos with your loved ones. Basically, it's a personal space for your family's memories without third-party ads or unwanted eyes, and with a bunch of fabulous features. It automatically sorts photos and videos by month, allowing you to swipe back in time and easily see how your child has grown. And you can also order 8 photo prints every month to be delivered to your home. The Family Album app also has unlimited storage. Plus, it's totally free. Yup, no more worrying about running out of space or being bombarded by third-party ads. So, to all the parents out there still trying to use other messaging apps for your kids' photos, level up your family photo game for free and securely with the Family Album photo sharing app. Head over to the App Store today, search Family Album, all in one word, and download the app to start creating your shared photo legacy. And I like that there's movement, so that what you're speaking to is the movement that happens at higher levels and institutionally, globally. And I think there's also a movement on the consumer individual basis where moms are becoming more informed and trying to realize that it's their experience and they do have choices and they need to inform themselves so they can make the choices that are right for them. But I also think it's really important for them to hear things like what we're talking about, sort of demystifying a little bit the authority, not authority, but the physician as all knowledgeable, because if their wishes are to have a natural birth, it's hard sometimes to have that intuition be heard and to find your voice to speak loudly when the person who very much is caring for your health may not necessarily trust what you're feeling or have a relation or know what you're feeling because they haven't been exposed to it and just know the intervention part of it.
I think medicine still has a long way to go in understanding, how should I say, inner wisdom, the body speaking. There are some scientific publications coming through with a scientific concept of interoceptivity, which means that the person becomes aware of what's happening in their body, their inner sense of balance. And interestingly enough, there have been a few fledgling reports about how oxytocin increases interoceptivity, increases your inner awareness of what is going on. So that's interesting. I was actually amazed to hear that in my own university, as part of this integration of professional development module that I was talking about, that there was a lecture in second year of medical school on embodiment and the definition of that in psychological terms. So again, there is some movement within academic circles, but that is definitely not a sort of a strong message that's going out in the average education. So the only terms in which a woman can vocalize her needs by whatever means, whether she has intellectually thought about it or it's through her intuitive reasoning, is human rights and her rights to autonomy over her body. And that is something that is recognized worldwide. And so that is probably the only avenue in which a woman could articulate the rights over her body integrity, which is another term that the World Health Organization had in their statement about respectful care in pregnancy. So in my average antenatal clinic, which I hold weekly, when I hear women with these sort of requests, I use a multidisciplinary approach. But what I listen for, but again, this is just my perspective, is whether this decision has come from a place of inner wisdom and listening to their bodies, or whether it's an intellectual pursuit just for the principle of wanting an idea intellectually, or for the principle of human rights, or the principle of feminism. And then I have to admit, I feel a bit more uneasy because it's coming from a place where the body hasn't been listened to. But whatever it is, and whatever the processes that are going on in my mind, I recognize that fundamentally that a woman has autonomy. And as long as things are discussed and from a hospital's medico-legal perspective documented, then I organize a multidisciplinary team with senior midwives, and we try to do the best that we can, essentially. And that's my personal practice, but I know that that isn't the experience of all women. But those are the principles that I employ at my hospital.
And so what would you say to moms, both from a professional and a personal point of view, in terms of how they can increase that tuning in and listening to their intuition?
What helped me in my pregnancy was actually, and this is not a recipe for all by any means, but what really helped me was slowing down. If you're rushing around, if you're at work, it's harder to get there. But if you have no choice but to rush around, I did pregnancy yoga, which helped me sort of slow down, become very aware of my body. It had time for that connection to my baby. And certainly there are publications saying that the mindfulness practice in pregnancy yoga does reduce fear and apprehension of birth, and gives you a sort of an awareness. So that may not suit all people, but I think in a Western civilization that hasn't been around for, you know, eons. One has one's body, and if you're given the space, and if there's support in society, support of the partner, or if a woman can find a group where they can talk to other pregnant women, that can also help. I think there is a study by an author called Taylor from UCLA that says when women gather together and talk in circles and share their concerns, their oxytocin levels go up and then their stress levels reduce as a result of that. So group circles of women would help. I'm not proposing a one size fits all way to.
And I wouldn't expect you to.
Yeah. But those are things that helped me. And I think for individual women, they may find their own solutions. But having some space to be with themselves, to explore themselves, and hopefully a bit of support so that they can get that space is a way into that kind of sense of health balance, inner awareness. Mm-hmm. A doula is, of course, I think, another way in, having support. Having continuity of midwifery care, I think that there's something about the biochemistry of a trusted relationship and support that, again, I think may have something to do with the biochemistry of trust. And we know oxytocin's involved in the biochemistry of trust. And then that would give you perhaps a sense of internal awareness. So, you know, those sort of things.
Mm-hmm. I'm really liking that phrase, the biochemistry of trust, because it really brings together the science and the intuition and mind and body and spirit and all of those components that make us whole.
Yes, I think that's quite a topic in health, actually, that's hopefully going to be expanded upon, as I can see that colleagues are awakening to that in terms of decision making.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to start using it a lot more as a phrase. I think it conveys a lot. Now, in terms of the support that you were talking about, when you made your decision, which was, I'm sure, unexpected even to you, How did the people around you react? How did you find the support, or did you find surprise or astonishment?
I had continuity of midwifery care from, I suppose, senior midwives that were very good colleagues. So that was good. And I knew that two good colleagues were going to be there, two midwives. So I know you could say that maybe not all women would have that opportunity, but being an obstetrician, most of the births that I've seen, because of the nature of the UK system of obstetricians only handling abnormal birth, my mind and my memory of births is full of medical problems. So having these two people that I trust, who I've observed have good results, was very beneficial for me, an antidote for my many years of immersion in problematic obstetrics. Some of my colleagues, not my immediate consultant colleague who looked after me, but a couple of my male colleagues were very concerned, and I could hear them saying, oh, please do have a cesarean section, Amali. Anyway, you know, that's their perspective and that's where they're coming from. And I, you know, with all the doctors that really have a lot of consternations about home birth, I really understand their perspective. I completely get it, because I remember being in that position before. There's a principle in global health, which I think has led to the WHO having their recommendation to the world, saying that women should be directed towards facilities for birth, is a model in global health called the three delays model. Are you familiar with that, Adriana?
I am not.
So the three delays are, the first delay is the woman or her immediate caregiver not appreciating a problem in pregnancy, and not knowing that there is a problem means that they don't seek the relevant medical health care. The second delay is, once they have realized that there's a problem, there may be infrastructural issues in terms of lack of transport or societal issues in developing countries. Say a woman has to gain permission from a village leader to travel to a hospital, and there can be delays at that level. And then the third level of delay is problems with the actual facility. In a developing country setting, perhaps it's lack of blood transfusion or the necessary surgical expertise or any kind of that sort of stuff. So there has been, on a global health level, a kind of worry about these three delays. And that's why they've recommended facility-based deliveries. But then now, and certainly the Safer Motherhood and USAID have picked up the fact that facilities can't cope with that many normal women in labor. And that when you herd people into a sort of industrial model of healthcare, the humaneness of that care reduces. And that's when you get the disrespectful care. So I think, going back to the experience that has happened in England, that has led to the fact that we are now becoming more aware that we have to have compassion, which is an obvious thing in the system, is because of the principles of medicine from a kind of political, infrastructural kind of perspective, where there has been a thought that to make health efficient, you have to kind of have a factory line model, and human beings just don't work that way. And I think this is now being recognized. So we have to see what comes forth. And I have no solution for every woman in terms of, if she has difficulties with a healthcare provider, what she has to do. But look locally and see what the setup is in terms of support. That's all I can suggest, really.
And it's a huge suggestion, because I think the fact that we're talking about this and women hearing that there are possibilities and options and choices, and that they can be encouraged to go and look a little deeper and listen to their intuition and to their bodies, will ultimately improve the whole system, both from the upper level and the consumer level. So I thank you so much for, one, having listened to your intuition during pregnancy, and also for all the work that you do to try to make birth a better experience for all moms.
Thank you, Adriana. Lovely to talk to you.
That was consultant OBGYN, Dr. Amali Lokukamage. Her most recent book is called Within the Pregnant Pause, where she combines medical knowledge with mindfulness, beauty, and compassion. You can find Dr. Amali on Twitter at Doc Amali. And you can connect with us on Instagram at Birthful Podcast. In fact, we would love to hear what your biggest takeaway was from this episode. So if you're not driving, please take a screenshot right now and post it to Instagram with your thoughts and make sure to tag at Birthful Podcast so we can see it and share it. You can find the in-depth show notes and transcript of this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about my small birth preparation classes and download your free postpartum preparation plan. Birthful is created and produced by me, Adriana Lozada, with production assistance from Asia Plotty. Thank you for listening and for sharing Birthful. Be sure to follow us on Good Pods, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and everywhere you listen. And come back for more ways to inform your intuition.